Hello, everyone. I am Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show. And we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And remember, it's a listener-supported network, and they do deserve your support. They keep two streams of music on just about 24/7, and it's a great team of people. They work very hard to keep this station on the air. So head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio and make sure you show them some support. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Well, hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Julius Oliphant, Karen Katowski, Michael Annis, Frank Cordero, and Philip Ferruzio. And so this Thursday evening, we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in Des Moines, Iowa, in northern Minnesota, in Yaoundé, Cameroon, in Mount Jackson, Virginia, in Denver, Colorado, and wherever you are. Now, my recommended list for May 23rd as we all continue on our path to becoming fully woke. Recommended, worth your valuable time, YouTube, Mary W. Maxwell talks Podstava on the Boston Marathon, the Gumshoe News YouTube channel. Also, Mary Maxwell, 2018, the Tsarnaev Trial, open mic, 911tv.org YouTube channel. That's Mary W. Maxwell on the Boston Marathon, so-called bombing. Also recommended, UNZ Review, UNZ.com. Also recommended, Paul Craig Roberts, The Lies About World War II, paulcraigroberts.org. Recommended, False Flag Weekly News with Kevin Barrett. Find it at No Lies Radio, streamed live Friday mornings. Recommended, No More News, KNOW, More News. A presentation by Christopher Bolin entitled Terrorists Targeting Iran. And on YouTube, Andre Viltchek, VLTCHEK, NATO, Canada, and Western Imperialism. Recommended, democracynow.org, commondreams.org, Information Clearinghouse, and the nukeresistor.org. These well-known websites will not touch the real truth of 9/11, Sandy Hook, and Boston for some reason. So we know they are compromised at some level, but they give us valuable information. Use them as a tool to understand your world. Also recommended, Sandy Hook, Posner versus Fetzer lawsuit, defendant's motion for summary judgment. Find the full article at jamesfetzer.org. Also recommended, Wolfgang Halbig, a video entitled Dear Wolfgang. It's at Marty Leeds, L-E-E-D-S, 33 bitchute.com, bitchute.com. Andre Viltchek, a world traveling real journalist, asks us to realize what is the real world and to fight with those who are fighting, to reject the Western world's wealth and arrogance, join with the oppressed, and really do it. As for me, I've long hoped that my books and this radio show are some way to do that. And now, with the Sandy Hook lawsuit brought against Jim Fetzer, Moonrock Books and me, it is an opportunity to get a glimpse behind the curtain of what is really happening in the world and how so much is manipulated by governments and controlled media. It's a way to fight. Because if the world can know the truth behind Sandy Hook and Boston and Parkland, Oklahoma City and 9/11, the San Diego Synagogue false flag, the North Carolina false flag, and the others, we can really know our world, our country, our rulers, stop wars, and bring the world more into line with how things should really be, where people are not poor and people are not having bombs dropped upon their heads because of where they live. I believe all of this badness is based in a United States mainstream media that is controlled by the CIA, the FBI. It seems unbelievable. It is meant to be. These false flags are meant to groom us, to make us amenable to wars. It is a battle for the mind, for the soul as well, and we are fighting.
And now, we join in progress. another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, and so much more. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with this message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplice after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. Now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. President Cosmo Nutt is lounging in the Rose Garden talking to the Secretary of State, who used to be the head of the CIA. They both have legal pads in their laps while looking out over the broad, verdant yard and the beautiful sky and skyline, thoughtfully sketching dollar signs, tanks, and boobs. The Secretary of State, former director of the CIA, is briefing the President Nutt for his upcoming trip to Booga Boogaville, as the President Nutt refers to it. We lie, we cheat, we steal, says the Secretary of State and former director of the CIA. The President Nutt nods his head and turns a yellow legal pad page and begins another new page, begins his work by drawing across the top dollar signs, tanks, and boobs. That same day, the Secretary of State, former director of the CIA, was in Mrs. Thompson's fifth grade classroom for his granddaughters, bring a grandparent to class day. Standing in the front of the room with all the other grandparents lining both sides of the room, it was his turn to speak. As you know, he said, 9/11 was done along with Israel so we could invade Iraq, destroy it, invade Afghanistan, destroy it, invade Syria, destroy it, and now invade Iran, of course, destroy it. We lie, we cheat, we steal. That night, the Secretary of State, former director of a Central Intelligence Agency, was interviewed on The Tonight Show, and after high-fiving with the host and the crew in the audience, put up his hands and waved and shouted, "We lie, we cheat, we steal," along with a cheering crowd. And then they all added, "We murder." That weekend, the Secretary of State, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, was a guest speaker at his church. And after high-fiving with the minister and the deacon and the people in the first pews, put up his hands and waved and shouted, "We lie, we cheat, we steal," along with a cheering crowd. And then they added, "We murder." The Secretary of State, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, was the expert witness at the Sandy Hook trial. And after high-fiving with the prosecuting attorney and the judge and the people in the first rows, put up his hands and waved and shouted, "We lie, we cheat, we steal." Join us next week on The Americans, when we will see the Secretary of State, former director of the CIA, visit Terre Haute Federal Penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana.
Our first guest of the evening is Julius Alifong. Julius Alifong is a student and an activist living in Yaoundé, Cameroon. He sends along this introduction to his piece tonight, "The Imported State, Its Army and the Population, an Incongruent Mixture, a Fomenter of Violence and Mutual Destruction and Reconstruction." And now, Julius Alifong in Cameroon.
Hello, Chuck. Hello, Mike. Greetings to our listeners. Yeah, again, I'm reporting from Cameroon to present the situation we are facing right now. Cameroon is in Africa, and it's been for a long time now. I've been talking only about Cameroon, but Africa is, I mean, Africa is very big. We have so many countries in there. So, but Cameroon, because I'm on the field, and I witness a lot of things that are going on, and Cameroon being a post-colonial state, a state created by an international pen, a state created by Europeans, faces almost the same problem that all other African states go through. And Cameroon's case is peculiar because it has this history of being administered, or should I say colonized, by the British and the French. And when the British left, their inheritance stayed, but the French came in and continued with what they do most in other African countries, they colonize. So the situation is a bit peculiar. On the 20th of May was what they call a national day, a very polemic day in Cameroon, because people really do not understand what happened on that day. They call it reunification day, but reunification in Cameroon never took place on May 20th. So people really do not understand what stands out as, I mean, what people really celebrate on that day. Because if you go by historians, we'll find out that nothing really happened that day. On that 20th May, a child, a baby, 4 months old, was killed by bullet, was shot to death. And the mother said those who did it were the Cameroon military. And the Cameroon military is, as I can say, dominated by French-speaking Cameroonians, and some people say that they are controlled from France. In fact, it is a French construct to protect the interests of France in Cameroon. So they will really stand against anything that is trying to prevent them from enjoying what they have been enjoying throughout the years since independence in 1960-1961. But with all the crime that has been going on, I try to be a little more scientific to understand why we are in what we are today through the point of view of how the state was constructed. So I coined out something, or an article, I'm trying to work on it, which talks of the imported state, its army, and the population, colon, an incongruent mixture, a fomenter of violence and mutual destruction and reconstruction. I'm trying to show here the state in which we are, as I mean, most sociologists call it an imported state. Imported state because the state of Cameroon, like most African states, were created in Germany during the Berlin Conference of 1884-85. Bismarck and his French friends, and his European friends, sat on a table and carved out Africa without considering the socio-anthropological realities of the people and even the culture. So by creating a state from the West, Bertrand Badie, who is a French sociologist, defined the state in Africa as an imported state, as an imported artifact, a pale copy of utterly alien European social and political systems, a graft, a transplant, a foreign body, which does not suit the context on which it is imposed, sometimes artificially and sometimes by the use of force. When this is done, the result is that, I mean, Bertrand Badie, the French sociologist, tells us that when the state is imported in such a manner, the result is not only the inefficient functioning of the body, the state is a burden on the society and also a fomenter of violence. In other words, an imported state, when you impose something and put on a structure, on a reality that does not correspond with what you imported, you're going to have a hybrid which is more destructive than was there before the arrival of that graft and was on the graft itself. So that's how the state of Cameroon is. The state of Cameroon, as Karl Marx, I mean, it fits right into the definition of Karl Marx, that is a tool in the hands of the ruling class used to promote and protect their interests, and not necessarily the interest of the population and the territory, as we are made to believe. So the people of Cameroon, or of English-speaking part of Cameroon, which was formerly known as the Southern Cameroons, are forced to resist with determination and sometimes ferociously, because they are facing some sort of a double exploitation. You know, Bill Ashcroft and some other writers are post-colonial theorists, and they came out with a concept called double colonization. And it is from double colonization that I'm trying to carve out the word double exploitation. Double colonization because, first, those who created the African state, or those who created Cameroon, the Germans, afterwards the French and the British, and now the French, they created the state to exploit it, not for the well-being of the people, not for the well-being of the territory. They created Cameroon to exploit Cameroon for their well-being, I mean to exploit the territory and even the people. Now, there's another scholar, Richard Joseph, who carried out the study in Nigeria. He concluded that, and that he's talking about the military, because most of the havoc being caused today is done by the military, and the military is controlled by those who have power. So he says that the African military has been increasingly molded to reflect, first, the political project of colonial masters, then those of post-colonial autocratic leaders. This military has been converted into an instrument to defend autocrat sectional interests, thereby converting them into the predominant barrier to the restoration of constitutional democracy. This, he said in a book he entitled State Conflict and Democracy in Africa. So it joins back the idea of double exploitation. Now, when these autocratic leaders, I mean, when the French who created Cameroon, put in place a military that would fight to protect their interests, they trained the military to be dangerous to their own people. I mean, the military of Cameroon is more dangerous to Cameroonians, but it's being sponsored by the Cameroonian taxpayers' money. That is, you sponsor a military that auto-destroys you in order to protect France, to exploit its resources. And the double, that's the first level of exploitation. The second level of exploitation comes in with the leaders who are in place. These leaders, as Bill Ashcroft calls them, are referred to as comprador leaders. Comprador are some sort of middlemen. You know, they used to easily attain their objectives. That is, the president of Cameroon and his government are tools used by France to facilitate the exploitation of Cameroon. This is another form of colonization, but using your own people to colonize you. Now, with the military on its side, the ruling class is ready to do all it takes to protect and maintain its privileges. According to the Cameroonian political scientist Nji Ibrahim Uche, the ruling class constitutes what he calls the big men in Cameroon politics. And these big men will always make it impossible for Cameroon to experience political alternation. Nji Ibrahim Uche goes further with the view that the big man politics in Cameroon has put Cameroon in a situation that leads to the revival of anarchy and political constellation, practically through the practices of neo-patrimonialism and the personalization of power, clientelism, corruption. And these practices facilitate the transfer of power from institutions into the hands of the big men. And these big men use this power as a tool for personal gain. You know, that is why imported institutions, that the state and its institutions, have become have been used by the minority for their own personal benefit. And another scholar goes further to say that in post-colonial states, like Cameroon, for example, political authority and command over resources come mainly through the decision of specific individuals who act to serve their private interests. largely without regard for formal government institutions, rules and processes, and heavily protected by the army from the revolutionary spirit of the people. When the people want to cry, the army shuts them down. I mean, shoots at them. But one thing is certain, as I concluded with those I was discussing, there will be an unavoidable restructuring of the state in any form. It will take any form. And but this form will be defined by the forces in place. That's the forces that relate the people with the government, the people with the military, the people and state institutions. These forces are going to change the shape of the state. It can be separation, it can be secession, it can be changing the unity state into a federated form of a state. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I'll be back next month. Bye-bye.
Coming up in our next half hour, we'll have a moment. We will hear from Frank Cordero in Des Moines and Karen Katowski in Mount Jackson, Virginia. Please stay tuned to Revolution Radio, the listener-sponsored alternative to the lies presented elsewhere, day in and day out.
Some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles, a show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last two decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendivite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The seven herbs in Extendivite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendivite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendivite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We have again received word from Randall from Stevens Point. I got my gun and my truck. I told you I'm headed for the woods. Then up the mountain, and that's where I am right now. I can see y'all from right here through my scope. Don't worry. I got safety. Well, okay, it's on now. Tell Bubba Jean I always loved her. Don't follow me. Got on my camo jeans. You'd never find me. Hear about the big shootout, all that. Probably me, yeah. Randall's note continues. The essence of any false flag terror event is a story. Has to be compelling, and it has to hit us on an emotional level. It must feature heroes, villains, victims, an assortment of supporting players. It must have a setting, both in space and time, which becomes an essential part of its core message. The story will have a plot and subplots that are heartbreaking, angering, inspiring, and uniting, even if ultimately causing anxiety and a sense of helplessness in the audience. Our sense of security is temporarily threatened by a disorienting act of violence, but we're reassured that those in authority will protect us and we will find strength in overcoming the adversity. And more from Randall. Dave McGowan has explained why people are so hostile to the idea that Apollo was not what we were told. It is not the lie itself that scares people. It's what that lie says about the world around us and how it really functions. For if NASA was able to pull off such an outrageous hoax before the entire world and then keep that lie in place for four decades, what does that say about the control of the information we receive? What does that say about the media and the scientific community and the educational community and all the other institutions we depend on to tell us the truth? What does it say about the very nature of the world we live in? This is why the term conspiracy theorist has been cultivated and baked into our culture to defend those in power from having the big lies challenged. This is Andy Rooney reporting for the New American Dream Radio Show. Do you ever wonder, well, kind of people we have running our governments? If we really knew the truth, I believe we would be astonished. Forget about George Washington and the cherry tree, Ronald Reagan making America strong again, the George Bushes riding into the baseball game on national TV to throw out the first ball and then sitting in the front row. Forget about Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, the new liberal Democrats who care about you. SpongeBob, The Simpsons, and South Park, Calvin and Hobbes, and Snoopy have more to tell us than these guys. At least in the Soviet Union, when they saw nonsense and lies printed in Pravda and TASS, at least they knew they were lies. We are still at the infancy stage in our development, not questioning the lies. And so the next time there's a bombing or a threat of a bombing or a bunch of baby blue backpacks found on a brown bench in Bemidji, the healthy American, the true American, the real American thinks CIA, FBI, police. The real patriot refuses to stand for the national anthem, and rather than another knee-jerk reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, he says, not till I get some questions answered. Because this is important stuff. This has been Andy Rooney reporting for the New Nightly News. Don't you ever wonder?
The next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero, as always, joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. And right now we're going to hear the conversation between Chuck Gregory and Frank Cordero.
Good afternoon, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
Hi. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours.
So, I spent the night, Saturday night, in a holding cell in Des Moines at the Polk County Jail.
With, well, that's never any fun.
No. No, that, and the cement does not get softer as you get older. It just doesn't give. So I thought I'd just read the account. So I let the listeners tonight at least begin the my reflection on the witness we had at Armed Forces Day at the Drone Command Center. Five Catholic workers were arrested. It's the third annual Honor Vets Ground Drones Armed Forces Day Rally and Direct Action at the main entrance of the Iowa Air National Guard Drone Command Center took place Saturday, May 18th at 3 p.m. as planned, right before a major thunderstorm hit Des Moines. 25 people gathered to protest Des Moines' Armed Drone Command Center. Gil Landolt, the Des Moines Catholic worker and president of the Bill Basinger Vets for Peace chapter, was the first to speak. Gil speaks from his heart. As a vet for vets, it's always moving to hear him speak. Our second speaker was Susan Van Deer Hygen, one of three European Catholic workers visiting the States, who joined us in Des Moines for this witness. Susan is from Amsterdam, Catholic worker. And the third speaker was yours truly, Frank Cordero. I read a news release and an official kickoff announcement of the In Drone Warfare Presidential Candidate Pledge campaign. The Des Moines Vets for Peace and Catholic workers are joining knowndrones.com, a nationally a drone organization, in getting presidential candidates to sign a pledge to, one, stop all attacks by U.S. drones, and to close all U.S. drone control centers inside and outside the U.S., two, work for an international ban on weaponized drones. The final speaker was Des Moines Catholic worker Jacob Whitson. Jacob was wearing a green jumpsuit with a big white heart painted on the back with an A in the middle of the heart. He shared about recent dreams he's been having and then connected them to the work of the Drone Command Center, dreams that connected him to victims of drone killings, experiencing the fear and the death on the other end of the Drone Command's work. At the end of Jacob's talk, he joined fellow Des Moines Catholic workers, Frank, myself, Ruth Hart, Eddie Bloomer, along with Jerry Ebner, Catholic worker from Omaha, walking on the drive to the closed gate in the guardhouse at the entrance of the base. We were carrying a banner stating, Honor Vets Ground Drones, in front of us. Jacob was carrying a ladder behind us. The rest of the folks walked behind us 5 to 10 yards away. As soon as we reached the closed gate, the five of us, Jacob put his ladder up against the gate and immediately climbed up. He was greeted with a guard, a crowd of base security, some with guns, and was told not to climb over. Jacob complied and climbed down his ladder. He joined the other four holding the banner. After announcing three separate times over a loudspeaker that we were going to be arrested if we did not move off the base, enough time for everyone else to get back to the main gate and public property, all five of us were arrested. We were cuffed and taken by police transport to Polk County Jail. We spent the night in jail and holding cells, a thin blanket and a cement slab or floor as a bed. All saw the judge in the morning. Four pled guilty and were given fines. Ruth pled innocent and was given a court date. All were released by 2 p.m. today, the day of the day after the action, and back to the Catholic worker for our shifts.
Yeah, that's what we did with our weekend. It was just a good thing. I'm just glad we keep doing it. I'm very happy with our community. We're beginning to gel again and focus when we need to. And then of course do the day in and day out work of the Catholic worker, which is to serve folks here 5 days a week in our drop in center. We see anywhere between 50 to 100 people a day when we're open. And we're feeding them and giving food away and showers and stuff like that. Just giving people a hospitable space. It's not a bad life. It's got some integrity. I would tell people, being that we live in this country, that it has so little integrity as a nation and as a people. We are so far off the mark. Heart bleeds, as I'm sure it does for many listening. And hearing these words. So what do you think, Chuck?
Well, Frank, I am so impressed with the work that you do. And you keep putting yourself out there, going to jail for what you believe. And, well, that's, as you say, integrity. And you got it in spades.
It's the only card worth playing in these times, I think.
You're right. So you are so
that's where
right.
I'm at. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right,
you,
brother.
Frank.
Another week. I'll talk to you next week. Thank you. Bye bye.
Sounds good.
Our next guest of the show is Karen Katowski. Karen Katowski joins us each month from Mount Jackson, Virginia. She is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force and was stationed at the Pentagon on the day of 9/11. She ran for Congress once. She's a writer. She is a former radio show host. And now we're trying to attempt to contact Karen Katowski in Mount Jackson, Virginia.
Hello?
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Well, it's good to be here. Sorry I missed last month. New American Dream, there's a lot of ways you can take that. And the thing I want to talk about today is what they're doing to Julian Assange in the prison that he's at over in England, in London, I guess. I wrote about this a couple weeks ago at Lou Rockwell, and I received a lot of response to it because I have a friend, and this guy has friends, and so he's telling me what is going on in the hospital, or the prison where they're keeping him, and in London, and they're keeping him. Of course, he's a bail jumper, so they got him. They put him in for 50 weeks of a maximum 52-week sentence that you can get for bail jumping, and he's in that prison. And you can say, well, you know, they're holding him there, and they have that right to do that, or whatever. But the prison that he's in is one, you know, for terrorists and security challenges and whatnot. It's a maximum security prison. And what I wrote about and what I have been told and what I believe to be true is that he is being accessed, interviewed, and administered to by U.S. personnel as well as U.K. personnel. And what I was told, what I believe to be true, makes perfect sense to me. Multiple points of confirmation of this information is that he's being treated with interrogation drugs that the CIA's used for a long time, specifically BZ. I don't know the scientific name for it, but it's in the article that I wrote at Lou Rockwell a couple weeks ago. And anyway, this drug is it's an interrogation enhancement drug. It's a helps reduce the frontal capacity so that, so they can interrogate like truth serum that works a little bit differently than that. And it has some psychological effects, which are negative, of course. And why do we know this? Well, because of public documents published by the U.S. Army and the DOD, mostly due to FOIA requests or many, many decades after the the declassification has kicked in. And so this was used on our people, experimented on, used on other people. And I don't know how many people remember the 20th hijacker, the guy, he was an American. And when they went to trial, finally, he'd been treated with this. His brain was, I mean, he was not functional. He was not a functional human being, and is not to this day. It's been said that they treated Chelsea Manning with this, and she's not completely back to normal either. But in any case, they're definitely using a version, a variant of this this BV, which nicknamed Buzz. But what it does is, like a lot of things, it's in kind of, I think it's in the LSD category, causes some negative impacts as far as your mental state, hallucinations and things like that. Now, the United States uses these things on prisoners at will. Here in our territory, you know, the New American Dream territory, and they do it, of course, all over in the rendition sites, the black sites, places like Gitmo. Some years ago, the American Psychology Association, I think it's American Psychology Association, had a big flare-up, a big blow-up, because their doctors were facilitating this, and that's not something that was along with their code. And so they had some problems, and they clarified their charter to ensure that none of their members would participate in this. But there's plenty of government doctors. There's plenty of doctors that work for the government and interrogators and that kind of thing. So this is what was done to him. And, you know, if you've been following it, of course, the Assange, you know, the Ecuadorians received, I don't know, $4.3 billion in aid, some kind of crazy thing, and kicked him out of the embassy. Not that that wouldn't have happened at some point, but you can't say it wasn't in part due to some U.S. pressure, which we had been applying steadily for some time. And, of course, the IMF money and other money that the U.S. And U.S. allies control. So he gets kicked out using prison. But right about the same time, maybe a little bit before this, Chelsea Manning was in prison also. And she was in prison, I think, for contempt. They asked her questions. She didn't want to answer them. And she was released about a month ago. And then about a week ago, she was rearrested. And this time, she has daily fines for every day that she refuses to talk. And the reason they rearrested her is related to the interrogation of Julian Assange, our U.S. interrogation of Julian Assange, which facilitated by the use of drugs, facilitated by access to him without his lawyers, of course. And you know, if you're like, well, he has lawyers, he had a visitor, he's had some visitors, and he doesn't seem to be complaining. Well, one of the perfect aspects of BZ and this family of interrogatory enhancers, if you want to call them that, one of the key things that they found, even back when it was very, in the 60s and 70s, when they were experimenting on American soldiers to see how it worked. And it was very crude, I would say, and I think we've gotten a lot better. But even then, one of the advantages was the loss of memory. A few hours, up to 6 hours before administration, and then after for some time. So there isn't really a memory of it. And the other thing is, of course, it can be administered through skin or through other ways where you wouldn't really know. So it's not like there's this thing to remember. Anyway, it's a perfect government, American government drug or any government drug. Of course, as it evolves, it gets even better. So anyway, they interrogate them. They get information that they want, and the information that they want, why would they need to reduce his, you know, why do they need to torture him into revealing stuff? Well, they want cryptography information, they want passwords, they want WikiLeaks security process, they want to know everything about that to make their case. Now, in theory, in the American dream country that we live in theory, if you get information, if the police get information illegally, then we wouldn't be able to use that in court, right? I mean, that's something that we as Americans kind of take for granted. You know, if the information is the, you know, the fruit of the fruit of the poison tree kind of thing. So that doesn't matter. And when the U.S. government wants to get somebody, apparently, And it won't matter in the military court if they do have a military court, which doesn't look like they're going to. It won't matter in the Eastern Court, Eastern District Court of Virginia, where it is slated to be tried, because that judge is basically as good as a, you know, a military judge. She or he, I'm not sure which one it is, but that judge has been very reliable with the Manning prosecution and some of the other prosecutions, and does exactly what the U.S. feds tell her to do. So we have that. But they rearrested Chelsea because they were successful in the interrogation of Julian Assange. And that interrogation went on without his lawyer, under using coercive methods and also using BZ and a variant of BZ. We have this from multiple sources. These sources are anonymous. They will lose their jobs and probably be in jail if they're found out. So that's why, you know, people emailed me and yelled at me and said, well, you need to say who the sources are. Yeah, really? Right? You think? No. So this is what we're up against. And this is Freedom, circa 2019. This is the American Dream 2019. A lot of people, even activists, people on maybe the left, far right, people who are dissatisfied with the status quo, people who do not trust the state for whatever reason and would like to see it drastically altered, even these people, you know, cannot accept and cannot believe that this is being done. It's not even being done. Our tax dollars are paying for it. So, yeah, that's the American Dream. That's the reality. You know, it's happening now. Chelsea Manning is back in prison, being held for. Why do they want to ask her more questions? And why are they finding her now so to speak? Okay, because they know the right questions to ask now, because they were successful with Julian. Now, you know, am I putting two and two together and coming up with five? I don't think so. But I would encourage all the listeners there to really look critically. If I haven't made that clear every time I've ever spoken on this program, if I haven't made it clear already, really, look askance at whatever the federal government, certainly in the United States, tells you, and really any government agency, but particularly in the defense arena, in the intelligence arena. If they are working for the U.S. government and they're loyal to the U.S. government, they're probably lying to you. And I think you really have to wrap your head around that. If you want change, the first thing is to recognize, and I know most listeners here already do recognize it, but a lot of people refuse to really recognize it. They say, well, that wouldn't happen. That wouldn't happen. Why would our government do that? Well, why indeed? Okay. You know, we could go through a list of 1,000 things that our government has done in the past 5 years that indicate its thirst for power, its dedicated devotion to destroying individual agency in this country for many, many, many people, herding people into livestock pens, basically intellectual livestock pens. I mean, this is what our government has been doing. This is who our government is. This is what it is. You know, you know them by their fruits, they say. And this is a fruit. So anyway, am I a good American? Probably not. Probably not. Do I believe in the American dream? I would like to. I would like to. But the reality is it's more of a nightmare.
Karen, thank you so much. As always, you gave us a lot to think about. I don't know if it would be paranoid of me to wonder if, in addition to having figured out what they want to get from people using these drugs, maybe they're suggesting some things for them to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, what they want is evidence to be used, and so whatever you say can be written down and used. So they're creating a case. Yeah, they're creating a case.
Exactly.
You
know? Exactly.
It doesn't have to be what a person says at any... I mean, seriously, I always like to think back to Martha Stewart. You know, she went to jail in lieu of waiting for an appeal or whatever, but she went to jail for, I think, 9 months or something in West Virginia. And she went to jail not for... improperly trading stocks or insider trading. That wasn't even the charge that put her in jail. The charge that put her in jail was an FBI 302 form, I think it's a 302, was recorded on one date, one way, and then later another FBI agent recorded on another form 302 in a different interview something different. Those two forms didn't match, and those 302s are not recordings. Those 302s are written by the agent to interview. So, you know, I mean, it's about creating cases. And so many government bureaucrats, like bureaucrats everywhere, you know, they want to succeed. They want to have a win, you know. They want to have a win.
Sure. If we, you know, there's a lot of problems. We want to just, you know, normal humanity. We are our own problem. But, exactly, you know, the government facilitates the worst. Hey, everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay,
yes,
the Cosmic Oracle.
Well, thanks again, Karen. Really glad to have you back this month.
Need answers with the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last two decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendivite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The seven herbs in Extendivite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendivite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendivite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest to the show is Michael Annis. Michael Annis is the executive editor of Howling Dog Press in Denver, Colorado. He's a poet and activist, and we're going to hear from Michael Annis in Denver, Colorado, right about now.
Hello.
Well, hello, Michael. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Hi, Chuck. Hi, Mike. It's good to be back on the New American Dream. Tonight, I'm beginning a series of readings from Timothy Leary's Criminalizing the Natural, Naturalizing the Criminal. In the late 1980s, early 1990s, I corresponded with Timothy Leary, the Harvard professor of psychology, who in the 1960s morphed into one of the three top gurus of the psychedelic movement to expand human consciousness through the use of psychoactive drugs and plants, including LSD, mescaline, and mushrooms. He was an influential countercultural leader during this period of time. There were even romanticized popular songs written about him and his series of exploits, confrontations, and imprisonments via law enforcement, including the feds. Timothy submitted the essay to me for potential inclusion in my Stiletto Anthology series, which I published through Howling Dog Press. Subsequently, I published the entire essay in 1992 in Stiletto 2, The Disinherited, as the opening salvo for the diverse subject matter to be found therein. Leary is possibly remembered most for his statement, "Turn on, tune in, and drop out," which became an anthem of the late 60s anti-war countercultural movement. Adversely, President Richard Nixon once described Leary as the most dangerous man in America. So, Criminalizing the Natural, Naturalizing the Criminal by Timothy Leary. One, life is a southern exposure. Everyone knows that life on this planet emerged way down south in the hot, thick, steamy stew of the tropics. Way back then, the first life forms were lazy, single-celled, amoeboid, hot tub hedonists with ambitious appetites. Everything was organic, natural. Nothing was immoral, unauthorized, or illegal. In time, however, pre-programmed, mutually stimulating food chain competitions among the squishy unicellulars led to programs of physical fitness and careerist self-improvement. This, in turn, led to acquisitive materialism and the popularity of young, upscale, post-protozoan technologies such as sharper vision, high-fidelity aural reception, and hinged thumbs. There was, a few hundred million years ago, a predictable consumer craze for high-tech hunting and fishing gear, such as fangs, bones, teeth, and tusks, and high-fashion seasonal obsessions for erotically attractive fur coats, feather boas, leatherware, snakeskin hip huggers. Later, younger generations of self-directed organisms developed automobile bodies equipped with tentacles, wings, legs, which allowed the social climbing trendy forms to squirm, crawl, walk, or fly uptown to the more exclusive, temperate, classier neighborhoods, namely 30th to 45th streets, north and south latitude. Two, human species also emerged first in the tropics. Down south in the lush, luxurious jungles of the equator, our first ancestors needed no artificial technologies for survival. The glorious dark-skinned naked body was the instrument with which the original individual human related to the environment. Transportation downtown in the tropical jungles was by pedicab. Food gathering involved manual delivery systems. Social relations and communication involved gestures, spoken words, dancing, strutting. The semioticians call this body language. There was direct, skin-tight experiential contact with the commodity markets and energy centers upon which human survival depends. We're talking real estate basics here. Solar energy, pure spring-fed water supply, cavernous homes with wood-burning fireplaces, convenient neighborhood access to natural foods found in the handy vegetable, fruit, fowl, fish, and meat departments. Our newborn ancestors, 25,000 years ago, were equipped with an additional powerful survival appliance. They had brains calibrated like ours, with 100 billion neurons. And each neuron, we now realize, has the thought processing capacity of an IBM PC or Macintosh. The software, in other words, the thoughts, which operated this awesome neural equipment, was programmed to react to information from the local environment. The brand name for our species is Homo sapiens sapiens. This means human, the information processor, the thinker about thinking. With all that mainframe superpower parallel processing neurological intelligence, NI, built into our black fuzzy tropical skulls, not to mention the infinity of megabyte memory bank tellers, there had to be a whole lot of figuring going on in the heads of our ancestors. Just as our bellies are designed to digest food, our human brains are designed to digest and process information. This inevitably leads to thinking about why things keep on happening like they do. What, for example, must we do to satisfy the power, light, water, grocery supply sources? For example, why droughts? Have we forgotten to pay the water bill, and to whom? Why do the animals whose flesh provides our dinners decide to migrate? What have we done to our furry and feathered friends to cause them to walk out on us? From whence the powers of fertility, pregnancy, and birth? Why illness and death? Questions about the placation of and the bill payments to the provider of vital resources fall under the department of religion. The first human tribal cultures to emerge down south involved nature worship and were understandably polytheistic. Survival pantheism tailored to the conditions. Since the information each tribe received was limited to the neighborhood network, religion was hands-on, personal, practical. The gods, in other words, the higher power and utility companies, were local, reachable, available to the individual. So each tribe develops its own mythology, and each person selects the rituals for making theological deals. The powers of the gods flow through the individual body. Most pagan religious ceremonies involve the ingestion of sacred plants, which produce altered states of trance, possession, vision, triggering off intense dialogues with the supreme. Religious rituals involve the body, drums, chants, dance. Since the body is the only available appliance of survival and worship, it is flaunted and glorified in its naked centerfold beauty. The role of women in pagan cultures is naturally elevated because her body is seen as the producer of life. Tropical latitudes produce natural attitudes about the gods, man, and law. Nothing was illegal. 3. Humanity migrates north to the mid-temperate zone. There are many obvious reasons, climatic, psycho-geographical, logistical, why the next stage of more complex human cultures emerged in the mid-temperate, 30th to 45th, rather than the frosty, cold temperate, 45th to 60th, or the tropics. Next time you look at a world map, turn it upside down and Notice how most of the land lies north of the equator. Note how most of the inner waterways, the seas and lakes and rivers, are located on the affluent, busy north side. Suppose the Mediterranean had been in the middle of Africa, with the Nile flowing south to it, and the Congo too, and that big Gibraltar mouth opening to the Atlantic around Angola. Notice how almost all the enduring civilizations emerged in this narrow geographic zone, 30th to 45th streets. Life up north in the mid-temperate is more demanding. Your hunter-gatherer credit card won't get you far up here, lad. Natural technologies no longer suffice. There are a few neighborhood fruit stores and local delicatessens north of 30th Street. You got to start whittling and chipping artifacts, tools. During the years 4000 BC to 1500 AD, the strip between the 30th and 45th degrees became the frenetic high-tech genetic runway. Run your finger along the interstate roadmap. Recite the names of the exits. China, India, Persia, still a big tourist attraction, Babylonia, Egypt, Rome, Venice, Spain, Portugal. Can you feel the action? Along this thin highway moved the camel caravans, horse-drawn carts, the legions, the sailing ships, the galley cruise liners, the Iron Age technologies. All this movement was made possible by new hand-tool technologies for transporting people and for communicating ideas. Literacy and the alphabet made long-distance communication possible. Can you visualize how small tribal gene pools numbering hundreds and then thousands of souls became absorbed into nations numbering millions? These centralized feudal empires were held together by collective labor and strict cultural rules. The individual becomes a dependent cog in a vast hierarchical social structure. In ancient Rome, food, water, lodging, security were not obtained through natural physical actions. The goodies came from Caesar's utility departments. Politics is no longer a personal confrontation with the family next door. It involves submission to the ruler. Religion is no longer a personal handshake deal with the local GODS, God's on duty, but a complicated political coda of instructions, commandments, rewards, recorded on marble tablets and illuminated manuscripts, mediated by a bureaucratic priesthood which claimed to be fronting for the almighty mighty ruler who allowed no violation of his moral laws. When the neighborhood, 30th to 45th streets, was happening, the individual was vassal, totally dependent, and submissive. Tropical folks felt some primitive pride in their personal ability to put food on the table and avoid enemies via their own bodily skills, jungle smarts, and bribery deals with the utility companies. But the feudal person did not share this personal sense of self-confidence. The most revealing insights about any human culture or gene pool probably come from observing attitudes toward animals, the human body, and the female body in particular. Polytheistic societies totemically worship natural forces, animal spirits, and the naked forms of the attractive, healthy human. Check the religious art framed in the cave galleries of pagan people. Feudal societies, by grim contrast, are organized around the monotheistic principle of one elderly male god, the almighty ruler who sits on a throne swathed in regal robes. The monotheistic god who rules things along the 30th to 45th is never seen running around town bare-assed, flaunting his naked beauty and grace. Can you imagine Jehovah on the cover of Rolling Stone? Monotheistic religions tend to derogate the natural, scorn the body, and manifest a puritanical hatred for the naked female form. In Orthodox Christian, Jewish, and Muslim cultures, woman is covered by black dress and veils. This is tacky, low-fashion garb designed to conceal her life-affirming image. But life in hierarchical feudal societies is not all submission and puritanical repression. The man can always beat his wife, his kids, his camel. But the greatest source of pleasure and pride for true believers is this. You can always strap on your sword and head downtown below 30th Street and exhibit the superiority of your God and your gene pool by kicking innocent, nature-loving tropicals around. For 10,000 years and more, northern folks have invaded, conquered, enslaved southerners. Kill them, loot them, rape them in the name of God and country because tropical people don't count. They are heathen, pagan, illiterate, immoral, naked primitives. They have rejected the one God, and that's why we have the metal swords, the written Bible, the cavalry, the ships, and they don't. The invasion and colonization of the South by the North has produced a curious genetic stratification or cultural infiltration. The Northern colonizers built feudal age towns, cities, roads, ports, churches, bridges in their southern possessions, and they imposed their newfangled artificial man-made social, political, religious, cultural, and linguistic forms on the natives. The Spanish conquest and settlement of South America is a classic example of the trickle-down South phenomenon. The feudal system of centralization, monotheism, bureaucratization, hierarchy, military control based in Madrid produced a colonial replica of life in 15th century Spain. The South American Indians were gently coaxed into the familiar serf mode of the Iberian peasantry. They shuffled to the fields and then to church, and they knelt down and crossed themselves, just like the vassals did up in the 30s Spain. Next time around, I'll read the second part of this essay.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. That's a very interesting essay.
It gets more pointed in the direction, I think, in which we want to go. So as it goes along.
Okay. Well, thanks. We always appreciate having you on our show. And, next week, we'll be doing a, we'll be repeating the Ab initio segment, and we're hoping to get better quality. So I hope all of our listeners will be sure to listen next week for Michael Annis with Ab initio with music.
Very good. Thank you, Chuck.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Talk to you next month.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
Always good to
okay.
be on. All right.
Very good. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio. Phil joins us each week from Port Orange, Florida. And I spoke to him earlier, and here we have it. It's the umpire, stupid.
Okay, good evening, Working Stiffs. You know, with all this banging the drum with Iran and Venezuela, let's go back a little bit to a mother in war. Well, it was back right before our nation performed the most horrific act of preemptively attacking and invading Iraq in 2003, which was not only illegal, but highly immoral. I was at the video store. Okay, you remember them, right? The video stores. Rapping with my friend Kenny, the manager. Now, Kenny, the manager, was such a nice guy, despite his very conservative views. He enjoyed reading my columns, yet he would still always comment, "Your views are really way out there, Phil, but on some of them I actually do agree." Like what, I asked? "Well, I agree that we could have and actually need some sort of national health care for all of us if the government would cut down on excess spending, like giving money to all those regimes throughout the world that care diddly squat about us." Then we got to the subject of conducting the war on Iraq, and I stated the underlying fact that is rarely discussed in the mainstream media, that being that such a war would probably cost us taxpayers over $100 billion smackaroos. Suddenly, as if out of nowhere, this young mother, online with two young sons swinging from her arms, shouted out with such vigor, He's got it now. We cannot wait any longer. He has the uranium. He's a danger. Kenny assured her that I myself do not like or support someone like Saddam Hussein, but she cut him off. He can make the big one pretty soon. He's got to go before he uses it. Then I asked the two of them, why would this guy, if and when he had the bomb, why would he risk losing his power, his country, and more importantly, his life? Why would he use this bomb as a preemptive strike? Sound familiar, George Jr.? When it would be the last thing he would ever do alive. I concluded that men like Saddam Hussein want to live as much as the next guy, or the next, shall we say, despot, especially since they live so well. They want to die of old age in a nice warm bed with the power under their pillow and not go up in flames just to say, got you first. Finally, I intimated that the only way this clown would ever use any weapon of mass destruction, seemed to be the phrase of that day, it would be if he were cornered and trapped like the proverbial rat that he is. Isn't that usually when rats attack? Well, the mother in war was already swinging her kids, movies in hand, out the door, shouting back that I was crazy to ever trust this madman. I tried to answer her about which country had the greater madman, but she was already climbing into her Land Cruiser, which, I kid you not, had license plates that read, support education. I wanted to tell her that the $100 billion we would save could go pretty far in supporting education, as well as better health care for me, for her, and her swinging kids. Too late. She was off into the Friday traffic, getting her 12 miles per gallon. I guess this war with Iraq would go a long way for her. Perhaps the 112 billion gallons of oil under Saddam's bed would help lower her gas prices. Finally, I scratched my head in wonder. Isn't it so easy for any of us to send troops into war, like they did in the 60s when many of my schoolmates returned in zipped bags? So easy to send some other mother's son to fight and die. I wondered if A, mother in war's boys, if they were 18 and 19, not 3 and 4, and B, if we had a military draft in place. I wondered how gung-ho mom would then be. Perhaps she'd load her boys into that Land Cruiser and gas guzzle it to Canada instead of some troop transport. So once again, the John Boltons, Elliot Abrams, and the ghost of good old hero John McCain, he of bomb, 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 Iran, to the tomb of the Beach Boys song, Bob Iran, and all the other warmongering cowards are once again banging the drum. Before we sign off on giving this or any president the power to wage war without a congressional declaration, as what transpired regarding this Iraq invasion, we and our politicos should have investigated all the facts and all the options. Do you hear that, mother in war? Well, by now, your boys can now be ready to land in Tehran. Thank you.